Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 165 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. And today, I know everyone is really excited and waiting for the Pizza Robot and Automatic Barista episode of Tech Bites, the weekly show where we look at the intersection of food and technology. And you know what? Almost every show on Tech Bites, the future is now. The future is today. We have robots. We have automation coffee. We have future, the future of food, all of that. It's exciting. And we have pizza because many of you listeners may or may not know, the Heritage Radio Network studio is located inside two repurposed shipping containers at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This has always been our home. We're coming up on a 15-year anniversary this fall. And we love it here. You can hear maybe the ambient noise of the music. Pretty soon you'll be hearing us eating pizza because it's part of the joy of recording here. We love it. It's our home, and we are so happy to be back in studio. We recorded remotely from 2020 up until a few weeks ago because of the pandemic. And we got to hear all of our friends and colleagues, but we didn't get to see them. And today is the first time I've seen my engineer and the big production honcho at Heritage Radio, Matt Patterson.
Hello, hello.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe it's been so long since I've seen you.
I know, it's a pleasure to be back in the studio with all you fine folks.
And pizza.
And pizza, yeah.
Pizza's coming.
Got to see Jimmy Carboni of Beer Sessions Radio this week too. So it's been nice to have some people come through the studio.
Does it feel like almost 3 years have passed, or does it seem like we were just on one of our like summer or holiday winter breaks? Does it seem like 3 years or just like 3 weeks?
Oh boy, I don't know. It definitely seems like a while because we've had the studio. Some people have been coming in for a lot longer than just a couple weeks, and so people have been coming and going. Different. There have been waves and waves of opening, waves of closure. So yeah, no, it feels like a while.
Okay, well, you look exactly the same, and I'm sure everyone will think that your voice sounds exactly the same.
I appreciate that, and same to you. You also look exactly the same.
Exactly the same. So I look like the version of me from 2020.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. With a cooler Heritage t-shirt. Don't think I didn't notice
that. It's the same t-shirt. This is the original t-shirt.
I thought you had done like a new treatment to it. This is good content, by the way, for audio.
But, t-shirt.
Jen is wearing a very vintage Heritage Radio Network Live.
It's the original one. It's the original one. This thing is probably like 5 or 6 years old.
Well, I think it's you just did a COVID thing. It's probably 10 years. It's probably like 10 years old.
But I've only been doing the show since 2015, so I would not have gotten Heritage swag before that.
Okay, that makes it 8. Yeah, okay.
All right. Wow. That's a lot of content.
Yeah.
Today, you are listening to episode 294. We're happy to be back in the studio. When we started Tech Bites in January of 2015, the idea was live conversation. And back then, the show was broadcast live as we were doing it. It was recorded and then reposted on every single podcast platform you can imagine. And having live conversation with people in the same space has a really dynamic, fun energy that I love. And I miss that a lot when we were recording remotely. The upshot to the remote recording is that you get to talk to people from all over the world. But now that we're back in studio and we're back, I think we're back to live action and pizza. I mean, how can anybody turn that down? To point, we have joining us today, Benson Tsai, who is the CEO and founder of a company called Stellar Pizza. He is in from the West Coast. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to talk about pizza and eat pizza here.
Exactly. So he's going to be maybe a little bit more of a tougher professional critic on the pizza front because he has a pizza company, pizza robots in pizza trucks. Oh my God, it's the perfect storm of everything. And sitting next to me is Stefan von Mühlen, who is the CEO and co-founder of Pour Steady, which is automated pour over coffee, automated barista, but he's local from Brooklyn, which is great. We love to come in and have another local Brooklyn business join us. So your commute was a little shorter.
Yeah, I just rode my bike from downtown Brooklyn and I'll be heading back to the Brooklyn Army Terminal after this.
Nice. You might have to bring pizza for the office staff because they might be jealous.
I already have a basket full of my CSA vegetables I have to give away before I leave for the weekend.
Okay. All right. I think I love CSA vegetables, but pizza would probably be more exciting.
Yeah, well,
for the office.
Do what we can.
Okay. So today's show is about automating food, robots. You know, for the past 5 to 10 years, I would say, the restaurant and hospitality industry has been lamenting a shortage of staff. Front of the house, back of the house, prep, cooks, bartenders, pastry chefs, waiters, servers, everybody. There has been an increasing shortage of staff. And the pandemic, I'm going to say made that shortage even more acute and more intense for a variety of reasons. You know, when people had to shelter in place, if your job requires you to be in person someplace, you can't make money if you're sitting at home. So there's a huge contingent of people who are service people, who are face-to-face people, who couldn't work from home, who didn't have paid vacation, who couldn't do the remote thing. And, you know, the hospitality industry suffered because of that. A lot of people found other opportunities, other things to do. People relocated. They went back home. People also decided that maybe they don't want to work 90 hours a week anymore and wanted more of like a 9-to-5 kind of life with paid vacation and health insurance. And that's a challenge for the restaurant industry. So there's a lot of different things swirling around from 2020 onward. And one of those things is hospitality is short-staffed. So it's a good moment, I think, for automation and robotics. I think probably, while some would say, and we'll get into it maybe a little bit with Stefan, who maybe has a little bit of a barista uprising when they think about automation, but a redistribution in the hospitality industry from maybe people working in the restaurant to maybe people delivering or doing marketing or other types of things, and just the shift of where people want to eat. I'm noticing with greater and greater frequency, coffee vending machines. They have the robotic ones out in San Francisco because, of course, San Francisco is, you know, very close to the tech hub of all things like tech in the U.S. And they have actual coffee robots and ramen robots and these vending machines where you watch the robot make your thing. In airports, you know, when I'm traveling, and even in Europe, a lot of coffee machines that are on the platforms that are very different from the old school coffee machines where it was just sort of like hot water and mixing powders. But actually brewing and grinding coffee and things like that. So it's a lot of fun. Plus, who doesn't love robots? I mean, everybody loves robots. I mean, the future is robots for the most part. And we're here. We're here. AI, robots, all of that. And it's thrilling and scary and all of that at the same time. So, but what better way to ease into robots than with things that we love like pizza and coffee? So we're going to start with Stefan because you actually started Pour Steady back in 2015. We'll just sort of like work chronologically through like time, life, technology.
Yeah, we formed Pour Steady January 2nd, 2015. So just a few weeks before you guys.
Just a few weeks before us. And so for people who may not drink a lot of coffee or who may not be familiar with the pour over coffee methodology, Stefan, why don't you give us just a quick 101 on what is pour over coffee?
pour over coffee is a manual way of making the perfect single cup of freshly brewed coffee. So you can imagine going to, you know, 7-Eleven and getting coffee out of an urn, and you don't know how long it's been there, and you don't know really where it came from. And then there's the specialty coffee industry, which really prizes unique coffees from, you know, origin that are flown or taken, you know, green to the roaster, roasted within a month of being served, ground right before the single cup is made, and then generally served black. And it highlights all of the variety, almost like a wine connoisseur in the coffee world. And that started to have an audience and a following, you know, before us, certainly. By 2013, Blue Bottle had already kind of hit the scene and was bringing it into a commercial coffee setting. And what, you know, was readily apparent to the customers, the servers, and the shops that were trying to do it, while this may be the best way to serve a single cup of freshly brewed coffee, it is not necessarily the right way to do it in a busy coffee shop. So we sort of saw a barista trying to make three pour overs at once, where they're literally measuring the amount of water, pouring it in like little spirals, weighing the coffee as it's happening, weighing the coffee using timers and trying to get a repeatable perfect cup every time. And as designers and engineers, it was sort of like the aha moment was, we can make a tool to help this barista. So it wasn't really ever about replacing the barista, but making a tool that makes this style of serving coffee work as well as making an espresso in a busy coffee shop. And so that was sort of where we started. And where we ended up now is a company that, you know, we have, I don't know, 1,100, 1,200 machines all over the world serving up pour-over coffee in busy coffee shops. We have a new product on its way that kind of addresses some of the things we've learned along the way. But the real mission is to make this style of coffee and our equipment a little less weird to hit kind of a bigger, fatter part of the industry. Luckily, it's a huge industry where half the adult world drinks coffee every day. So even if we own the top of the pyramid, we have a pretty good business. And as we sort of move down into more normal places, there'll be better coffee and more pour steadies.
Well, the interesting thing about pour over coffee is, you know, trends bubble up based on, you know, a shop, an influencer, a journalist discovering something. But pour over coffee is actually something that's considered super convenient and very low tech in many parts of the world, where you may not have a lot of electricity and you may not have a Mr. Coffee machine and you may not have access to those kinds of things. When you go to Asia and you go to a supermarket, the whole coffee tea aisle is amazing. They have so many varieties of like instant coffees, but they also have little, you know, coffee almost like tea bags or sachets or like ready-made preloaded cones of coffee that you put over a cup or over a pot and you just pour hot water over it. The idea being that maybe you don't have electricity or maybe you don't have the appliance, but you have some way to boil water and pour hot water over it. I actually have a set of two really old, probably like early 1900s or something like that. It's a little French coffee set where it's a coffee cup on a saucer, and then it has this little almost like metal basket that sits on top of it with a lid and it's a filter, and it's essentially like a very charming like pour over coffee situation. So it seems like it's a new thing, but it's really not a new thing. And in some parts of the world, it's not a fancy, expensive, specialty coffee experience. I love Muji, the Japanese utility store. It's like a wonderland of fun, inexpensive things. And they have sort of like a pour over coffee tea bag type of thing where, you know, you can get your coffee like that. And I just love it. So that's 2015. And in 2015, Benson, you were making batteries at SpaceX or something like that.
That's right.
I mean, you're the perfect storm. You're the pizza guy with the robots, but also SpaceX.
Yeah, I had just left Lucid Motors after designing that battery system and then joined SpaceX. And I was put in charge, or I was designing the Dragon, the spaceship battery, the new, you know, Dragon 2, which is the kind of the newest, greatest American spaceship. And I designed that battery system. I was designing that battery system during that time, and watching all of the amazing things that SpaceX was doing and being a part of it. So it was a really, really exciting time to be involved in the space industry And I was at SpaceX for about 5 years before starting this pizza adventure.
So I don't want to get caught in the weeds of talking about SpaceX too much, because we could.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to ask two really quick questions. How different is the battery for a spaceship from like the battery in my mobile phone, or the battery I'm going to put into like a flashlight, or, you know, an old school radio? My smoke alarm has a battery.
Yeah. I'd say the chemistries are slightly different, but beyond that, once you start looking at like electric cars and spaceship batteries, they're all lithium ion based, and that's the same as your cell phone. But the design philosophy, or the money you can spend on a space battery, is much larger compared to, you know, what you can spend to design a car battery or a cell phone battery. So the design paradigm is very different for spaceship batteries. You need to survive a rocket launch versus, you know, you're holding a phone in your hand.
So while you have a greater list of things the battery needs to accomplish, and probably a much more restricted, like, size, volume, weight component to put it into, you also have sky's the limit resources, because you don't actually have to sell it to the public.
That's right. You have
and make a lot of them. You just, how many of them do you need to make for a spaceship?
For a spaceship, it's usually like 2 to 3, because you need redundant power systems. But it's really,
so it's not like you're producing, you know, 50,000 or something.
No.
Okay. So that was my first question. The second question is, how do you leave a spaceship? Like, you said it was an exciting 5 years, like an exciting time to be there. Is there ever a time when a spaceship is not exciting? Are we blasé about it?
I was actually in charge.
Which is the segue into why you left, perhaps.
Yeah, I was in charge of the Starlink battery system, so the battery system for the satellite network. And I remember just realizing that I could design batteries for the rest of my life, and I was sort of bored. Like, okay. I wanted to change it up.
Fair.
And my parents, when they moved to America, actually opened a fish and chips restaurant, and my degree is in chemical engineering.
Which is essentially cooking.
It's cooking. And I remember doing kind of research projects for Wrigley's and sitting through Frosted Flakes coding seminars, and I was like, this is amazing. So I've always loved food, and I just wanted to take what I knew how to do and apply it to something that I was really, really passionate about.
And so you started Stellar Pizza in 2019 with two other SpaceX colleagues?
Yeah, two of my co-founders sat next to me at SpaceX, and we were all designing battery systems. They were in charge of the batteries for the rocket. But we all loved food. We would all leave SpaceX at lunch and go find new restaurants to eat at. And that's sort of how we became friends. And they just happened to be two very amazing engineers who had robotics experience at Carnegie Mellon. And that was sort of the idea. And my background before Lucid, before SpaceX, I actually started an electric truck company. So I knew, you know, I was in the vehicle space, and that was sort of the genesis of the idea for a fully automated pizza truck that could go and find where people want pizza and cook pizza.
Well, where people want pizza is right here, and we actually have pizza coming in from Roberta's. My personal favorite is the famous original with pepperoni. We also have the bee sting, which is Matt's favorite. So we're going to take a quick break to get our pizza and to find out who is underwriting this show. Did you know Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit? We keep the lights on and the mics hot out of generosity of our members, many of whom are listeners like you, grants, and underwriters like this one. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
You are listening to Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we look at the intersection of food and technology. And today that intersection is robots and automation with some of our favorite foods. We are talking with Benson Tsai, CEO and co-founder of Stellar Pizza. That is pizza trucks with pizza made by robots. If you're interested in finding out more about them, maybe finding out where you can find the truck, maybe trying to get a truck to come to your event, they are on the West Coast. You can find them online, eatstellarpizza.com, or on social media at eatstellarpizza. We're also talking with Stefan von Mühlen, CEO and co-founder of Pour Steady. That is an automated pour-over coffee machine, which might be a little much for somebody at home, but if you're in food service or think you want to open a coffee shop or just curious about what that might be if you've seen it, check them out online at poursteady.com and on social media at poursteady. Before we went to the break, we were talking about why you would leave a spaceship for pizza. And we just ate some pizza because we're at Roberta's Pizza, which is where the Heritage Radio Network studios are. I just love Roberta's pizza. It never gets old. So, Benson, I'm going to ask you first, how does the pizza stack up to your robot pizza?
It's delicious here, but it's a different style of pizza than what we make. We make more of a thin crust New York style versus this Neapolitan New York style.
Okay. And, Stefan, we're not going to have the coffee here because it's not probably quite the specialty coffee experience
I'm sure it tastes like coffee. Coffee, you know, there is such thing as bad coffee, but a standard coffee is usually pretty gratifying.
There's that famous saying, and I actually want to attribute it to Dave Chang, but I don't know that it's definitely him who started it, but I have heard him say it. And, you know, like, pizza is just one of those things, and coffee is one of those things also, where even when it's bad, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, even bad coffee and pizza is still okay, coffee and pizza, because you just want what you want. So before the break, we were also talking about Benson leaving SpaceX, where he was designing batteries, to do something that he, you know, loved a little bit more that would grab his attention. And he took some of his SpaceX colleagues with him, and they decided to do pizza robots. So where do you start with a pizza robot? I mean, the questions that I typically ask people on this show who are founders who have technology, was there something existing on the market? Did you have to build from scratch? Was there existing robotic technology that you said, okay, we're going to do that? I know that there are pizza machines that are automated where you put dough and things like that and you load it in and it's a conveyor belt and 12 minutes later you get a pizza out the other end. There's automated donut machines and all kinds of stuff like that. So what was there available off the shelf? Did you start with that and like MacGyver it, or did you build from scratch?
Yeah, so we ended up building from scratch, but definitely, I think when people think about pizza robots, they think about a robot with two arms, just like...
Right, like the Jetsons robot or C-3PO, like my pizza butler robot.
That's
my
right,
pizza,
that's
right. You know, house person robot, chef robot.
Yeah, and I like to tell people that we've actually been eating pizzas made by robots and machines for decades in the frozen pizza world, as you were saying. But when we decided to chase this mobile form factor, like our truck has all of the throughput of an entire pizza restaurant. We can make, it takes about 4.5 minutes to make a pizza from scratch, from raw dough ball. But it can make a pizza every 45 seconds to a minute, depending on what you order. So it's high throughput. And our truck stores 420 pizzas worth of ingredients. So high throughput, high capacity, but the mobility of a food truck. And so
battery thing again.
Yeah. To be able to do that, though, you need, you can't just buy off-the-shelf equipment. The power consumption is too high. The energy requirements that you need, it gets very complicated very quickly. And we don't want to have to drive our truck to an event and then plug in power and all the things that you might need. So I ended up recruiting a team of 30 former SpaceX engineers.
30 former SpaceX engineers to work on the pizza truck.
That's correct.
Okay, how many engineers are working on the spaceship?
Oh, thousands.
Okay, percentage-wise, it's commensurate the job to the
team.
That's
right.
Okay.
And we ended up designing from scratch because we needed everything to be super, super compact, lightweight, and low cost. That was the real, real kicker. Our trucks are quite affordable, and when we hit our target kind of numbers, the payback or the return on investment is less than a year.
Okay. Wow. 30 SpaceX engineers to build a pizza truck. That's a question, right? How many engineers does it take to, how many space engineers does it take to build a pizza truck? 30. Stefan, did you have existing technology or did you have to create something? I mean, as we talked about at the top of the show, pour over coffee is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And I have seen, certainly in coffee shops, sort of the 2-cup or the 4-cup, I'm going to say like rack system where you have, 4 pour over units with sort of like, I'm going to say spouts. And so it's like a frame that you can do 4 cups at one time, which probably just makes it easier and a little bit more streamlined. But did you have off the shelf technology or did you have to make it up on your own? Or
the technology oddly came first. There was no intention with the first prototype to make a product or a business out of it. I've been in the hardware space working in an aerospace engineering company here. I went to Stanford product design stuff, and I've been just making things in New York City for, my entire career. And we went to the Maker Faire in Queens in 2013, and two of my friends, Carnegie Mellon, aerospace engineers, had gone to a Blue Bottle in California when they were visiting Ames and saw this barista getting lost trying to make 4 while the line grew. And so one of them working on a pharmaceutical machine that was like kind of doing pipetting, imagine a room with no lights, like doing little doses into beakers or test tubes for 24/7. And so they kind of like cut and paste some code, used some motors that they had and built the first prototype out of like really not like maker kind of quality stuff, but aerospace engineer spare parts. And I went there that first day to help, run the booth. And we served 400 cups of coffee each day for both days of the weekend and took back all of these ribbons. And we were on the Tested blog. And I just kind of looked at the guys and I was like, Stuart, Mark, like, can I like do something with this? I was sort of in between my previous startup and we got into like an incubator and, got ready for the next big trade show and redesigned everything for an actual product. And that's where we kind of looked at all of the stakeholders. So we weren't just making a robot to replace baristas. We were making a machine to make pour over work as well as espresso in a coffee shop. So the customers were getting the same cup they had before and they weren't waiting for somebody else's coffee to be made. The barista was able to serve them and the coffee, and like the owner was able to train and staff like they would otherwise. And so everybody got something, and we were also just very mindful of that. We weren't forcing technology into a place where they didn't need it. We were just making this style of coffee work in a retail environment, and that sort of was the vision, and we've been able to like run with it for the last 7 years.
It's interesting technology that exists, how you see it, how you repurpose it. We had earlier this spring Nathan Myhrvold on. He's a science guy. You might find his show interesting, and he talked. He has his Modernist Cuisine lab, and they've published a number of books. Really going into the minutest detail about the history and process of cooking bread, pizza. But the book that he just recently published was about photography, and he talked about the different types of photography that they do and the lenses and to do the photography for the books. And it was just fascinating. And one of the most fascinating things he talked about was using a digitizer to calculate the volume of things when you have a recipe that says let double in size. Like, how do you know it's doubled in size if you're using like a different vessel or container and all that? So they would digitize things and then do math to figure out what the volume is and then see if it actually doubled in size. And it wasn't actually present anywhere in the book, in terms of that detail, but it was present in how they validated and tested the recipes. And I said, like a digitizer, like Mission Impossible, where they like digitize somebody's face and then they make the mask out of it? He's like, yeah, exactly like that. And I said, well, like, where do you get those? Did you make one? Are they really expensive? And he's like, no, you can buy them on Amazon. And I was like, oh my God, you can buy them on Amazon. And I wonder if that's something that, you know, other, you know, pastry people or chefs would utilize, because it's just a completely different way of thinking about something, or a completely different way of thinking how to solve a problem or measure something or do an equation. Neither of you have any kind of cooking or food or hospitality background. You're coming from the science and design side. Is there anything that surprised either of you about actually the food piece of it? Is there anything, Benson, that surprised you about the actual pizza dough and the pizza and the cheese? And had you given that much thought? Did you hire somebody who is an expert to do it?
Well, we first approached the food as science. It ultimately
it, of
is
course it's
science, right?
Yes, and so, absolutely.
So we,
it is
we
science.
Took a very, very scientific approach to the food at first to get us to a place where we were like, oh, this is pretty repeatable. And then we brought in the expert, you know, pizza dough people, and they came and helped and allowed us to kind of scale our science experiment into a real production for our recipes. But I did want to touch on your note of saying that, like, there's this technology curve, like things that are being developed in other industries have reduced the cost of robotics, of automation, significantly, to the point where you can buy something off Amazon that is used for something else and apply it to the food industry. And that's why I think we're seeing this moment in the food world where automation is starting to creep in every which way.
Well, I think we've seen it. I mean, an interesting point is going back to something you said earlier. When people think about robots, we think about C-3PO or the thing that looks like a person or an upright something with like arms and hands. But robotics are just automated things doing things. And the consumer packaged goods or industrial food production has been using automation for a long time. I mean, your cornflake story, like they've been, you know, automating cereal and all that kind of stuff. We watched videos, you know, on YouTube, everybody loves a factory tour. So a lot of that is automated, but we don't think about it as like robotics. The interesting thing is that there's so much technology that's already in the food world that we don't really think about it as being technology because it's become so ubiquitous. And go back to the idea of what is technology. Technology is just a tool to help you do something. So I think one of the greatest examples of like repurposed tech in the food space, I mean, I'm going to think of two. One is the microplane. The microplane is literally something from a hardware store that was intended for like wood shop and metalworking that somebody brought into the kitchen to shave really hard, you know, spices and cheese and chocolates. And now there's an entire line of microplanes.
Yeah, and nobody even thinks about it. I think the inventor and the founder was sort of disappointed. It wasn't like work used more by craftsmen and more by chefs. He really was, his heart was in the actual craftsman piece.
I'm sure he doesn't mind.
I know, apparently the story is it took him a while to come around.
Yeah. And the other one is sous vide and immersion circulators, you know, cooking at, you know, the water baths and the temperature and all that. That's a, you know, that is not something that was created to make like the perfect terrine or like the perfect poached foie gras or, you know, whatever. But it's so popular now, again, like going, you can buy them on Amazon, you can buy them online, you can buy tiny little immersion circulators that connect to an app on your phone, and you too can sous vide at home. They got the vacuum sealers. You can buy the bags at Walmart. You know, it's the future is now.
Yeah. I wanted to back up though and sort of make not a counterpoint, but sort of explain that we sort of took the opposite take of, you know, even though we were designers and engineers, we were coming into like a ritual with professional coffee people, and there were as many opinions about how to make a pour over as there are baristas. And, you know, we wanted to be very careful that it was the right amount of technology and that we weren't overstating what our expertise was. So we really specifically made a tool that, like, aesthetically, like, referenced kind of old Italian machines in a way. It wasn't a humanoid robot. It was, like,
but
really
that's the aesthetic. Forward. That's not the technology.
Right.
What's too much technology?
I mean, too much technology.
What was too much technology? What were there things that you had to take out of the machine or extract? Or
like, we literally designed it so that you could use a Chemex, a Melita, a Kalita filter. Like, there's new drippers that come in with all kinds of art and science and aesthetics packed into them, and they trend every couple of years, and they all work on our machine. So, like, if there's a barista who really likes cone filters versus flat bottom ones,
right,
they get to choose.
But did you have to take any tech out? I'm curious about the what's too much technology. I'm sure you have you have thoughts about what's too much technology.
If you look at the market, you know, like I said, there have been a lot of attempts at, like, fully automated robotic coffee shops.
So is that too much tech, or tech that doesn't work that people don't want?
In the ritual of coffee and the where people are right now in 2023, too much technology is the humanoid robot doing it. I mean, that's sort of my perspective. And I think the market kind of bears it out. Like, there's companies that get started and they get a few in some airports in San Francisco. And then they, like, go away a few years later, and then somebody else tries. And maybe society will catch up to that one day. But right now, like, people have feelings about their morning ritual. And to make sure that the person serving it isn't, like, upset by the tools that they're using and they appreciate it, and, like, the person getting it knows that they're getting quality without sacrificing craft or even, like, the social interaction. Like, in the end, you know, we use the word robot a lot, but it really is just a tool, you know, and it's a humble tool in a way. There's some theater in it. Like, if you watch our machine move, it, like, people go, wow, because it starts to dance around. But that's because it looks like a human hand is pouring it without the human hand there. And there's a little magic in that. And that, you know, doesn't replace the human being operating it, but it does replace the, you know, the person with, you know, tattoos and an apron who is making you wait
tattoos.
While they do the whole, I mean, you know, the kind of cliche, I apologize to all the baristas in the world that have tattoos, but there is, like, a strong aesthetic in 2015 when we started of what a barista was supposed to be. And that's evolved, and it's all
over
the world.
That's not technology, though.
It's not technology.
Fashion
but it's theater.
Social things.
But it is theater and
that's
social things.
That's why we go to the coffee shop.
Yeah, exactly. So if we made, like, a dorky humanoid robot to, like, do that, we wouldn't get very far. And, you know, the fact that we're still here kind of proves that we kind of hit some of the right notes to make sure that those baristas and the person who just took the job and their boss are all happy enough that the customer still wants to buy the coffee.
Hmm. What is too much technology in your world? Is there too much technology? Did you have to take something off the truck that you put on the truck?
I mean, for us, or for both our companies, I think we need to look at who the customer is and what the customer actually wants, right? When I go to a coffee shop, I enjoy kind of interacting with the barista, but I do see, you know, them stressed out over the fact that there's a huge line, right? So we're solving, I think that's the problem that you're solving, which is great. Like, I get a great cup of coffee. For us, we're trying to compete with the large pizza chains. And if you think about, like, going to a Domino's, you're not there to watch the artisanal kind of pizza get made.
And you might be there to watch the conveyor belt pizza thing, because it's a quick conveyor belt pizza, right? Like a little pizza oven where it comes out end.
But on your 10th trip there, I don't think you're looking at that machine, right?
No.
And for us, we will be, you know, on our app, we will be soon rolling out a feature where you can watch your pizza get made in the machine. But
the Stellar Pizza Cam?
It's a very digital experience. Our truck,
live, streaming live constantly?
You can't see inside, yeah, but yes.
Are you going to have a 24-hour live stream on Instagram or something like that?
Yeah,
you could.
I think we're going to roll it out on Twitch or something, but, like, we're still figuring out all the logistics of it. But for now, like, I want people to just have a really, really affordable, delicious pizza. And that's our mission. Like, the robotics or the automation is all in support of what the customer wants. And in the coffee case, it's very much that barista, that experience. And for us, it's just, like, affordable, delicious pizza.
Affordable, delicious pizza. Who doesn't want that? I think, you know, if you could bring that to the world, you could probably, like, ease a lot, you know, ease into world peace. I mean, you'd be really close to solving a lot of the problems, probably.
Yeah, one question I get often is, like, how did you convince all these rocket scientists to join this pizza adventure? And you know, our mission at SpaceX was to get to Mars, make humans a multiplanetary species. I think Stellar Pizza and our company in general, like, the goal is...
Pizza on Mars?
Well, no.
What do you mean, no?
What if...
if we're interstellar, we need pizza on Mars.
What if millions of Americans could pay $3 to $5 less for food?
That would be great. Yeah, I mean, food and feeding the population of this country and the world is one of the big things everyone's looking at.
That's right.
Yeah. So looking forward, I mean, technology, the future, I can't believe you're not going to put pizza on Mars, though.
Disappointing
a little bit.
How can
we have humanity without pizza in an interstellar sense? I mean, don't all the things have to go with the people or else it's not life on Mars?
Yeah.
I'm using air quotes. What do you have in the pipeline? What's coming the next year, next 5 years? What's on your event horizon for Stellar Pizza and the robots?
I mean, right now we're just trying to get everything figured out and scale the company within Los Angeles. So the next year or two is more trucks on the road showing up. We largely serve college campuses from like 5 p.m. till 3 a.m. And then for lunch, we cater. So we do this kind of multimodal approach to running a restaurant. But after that, I want these trucks all over the United States. And to my previous statement of I want like millions of Americans paying $3 to $5 less for food.
There you go. How many trucks do you have now?
We have two right now with a third one on the way.
And where can people find them? How do they find your trucks?
So they're in, you can follow us on Instagram. The handle is at EatStellarPizza, I think you mentioned earlier, or check our website, EatStellarPizza.com.
And then you update where the trucks are going to be.
That's right.
People can order a truck for an event.
Yes, they can book a truck, and we're actually really affordable.
Okay.
Our current prices are, for a 12-inch pie, is $7.95 in Los Angeles, which is incredibly affordable.
Okay. Right on. You got to drive that truck across country or something like that. Do one of those like roadshow things.
We have taken
them. Or go to
them,
the festivals.
We've taken them to Vegas and San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fun. And then, Stefan, what's in the pipeline for Pour Steady? What's coming soon?
We just announced in April in Portland and in Athens, Greece last week, our first new product in a number of years. And it's an evolution of what we've been selling with all of the lessons learned over the years of what the customers and what the market really wants. So it's a smaller machine that costs less, that has more functionality, and is actually a little less reliant on the internet. So it could just pull it out of the box and plug it in and plug water in it, start making coffee, which makes makes it a little less friction to get it into more places and make pour over a little less weird and hit a bigger piece of the market.
Is there ever a home model, or it's always professional?
I mean, we manufacture everything here in New York City, and we, you know, have our background in aerospace engineering and design, so we kind of like the making commercial equipment without compromise. You know, if we shifted to the home model where you're making these machines for less than $1,000,
Home models that are upwards of 1,000.
Sure,
can go
I know,
to
but
like
our,
5,
our, but
6,
like,
7, 10.
Yeah, so there might be some rich folks that would like to have one of our machines in their house, but I think that there are other companies that are doing a great job of making, you know, single cup brewed coffee from the bean to the cup very well, and more power to them. And like, if we can bring this perfect style of serving coffee to more people, we'll all do well. So I'm happy to have that happen alongside of us, but we're not quite racing to the home market just yet.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Pizza robots, automatic baristas. It's all happening. You know, if you like the ideas on this show, and if you think it's fun to learn about how these things get made from the people who are making them, this is episode 294, which means we've got lots and lots of interviews with founders and innovators and CEOs. You might want to check out episode 291, which is another battery food truck story, but this time it's ice cream. You should do an event with the ice cream truck and the pizza truck all on the batteries and get that working. It'll be like a nice 1-2 punch. We also did a shipping container show that had some robotics. Episode 258 is a little tribute to Roberta's Pizza and the Heritage Radio Network Studio, which is to repurpose shipping containers. I cannot give enough love and gratitude for my studio, my people, my restaurant, and my pizza. You know, back at when we did episode 200 in March of 2020, who knew if we were ever going to be back here? And we are. And the pizza is just as good as I remember. I want to thank Benson Tsai, CEO and co-founder of Stellar Pizza, for coming all the way from Los Angeles. Follow them at Eat Stellar Pizza. Find them online, eatstellarpizza.com. I want to thank Steven Von Mueller for riding his bike over from Brooklyn, CEO and co-founder of Pour Steady, poursteady.com and at Pour Steady. If you love this show and you can't live without it, go to heritageradionetwork.org, click the beating heart, and make a donation. Maybe give us what you spent on a cup of coffee today. It'll help us make more radio, keep the lights on, and the mics hot. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and this is Tech Bytes.
Tech Bytes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.